Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This started a long life of group homes, detention centers, and ultimately prison.
At what point did they intervene? Why didn't they intervene?
It's a situation that I would not want to find myself in. I would never want to get attacked, and I would never want to have to defend myself by killing somebody.
And the big question we always ask, John, is justice been served here?
This is True Crime Cast.
This is True Crime Cast. Jamie here with John. How you holding up?
Hey, man. It's a great day to be here. We've got a great case on deck. So, yeah, man, I'm excited. Yeah. How are you?
Good. Good stuff.
You came in singing show tunes, which was weird.
Yeah, I was singing Hamilton. I don't know why. I don't know. In a good mood. It's pretty spring day. It's
70 outside.
Crime in front of us.
70 degrees is perfect. I need to move somewhere where it's 70 all the time.
Been a big week in true crime. Last week, when this will be out on Tuesday, last week, they wrapped up the Ryan Duke trial. At this point, I'm still waiting on a verdict. Nothing there. Ryan Duke took the stand. Bo Dukes took the stand and pled the fifth. A lot of drama. A lot of people think that it's going to be a not guilty verdict for Ryan Duke, so something to keep an eye on.
I'm going to be honest. I was too busy watching Amber Heard, Johnny Depp trial.
Same.
So I missed out on all of that. I need to go back and catch up. But man, this Johnny Depp and Amber Heard trial seems to be taking a while.
It is a hot mess. A lot of conflicting stories, a lot of courtroom drama, a lot of her attorneys looking like they don't know how to attorney. So anyway, just a lot going on in the true crime world, a lot going on here at True Crime Cast. So I'd like to thank some people as we get started here. This comes from Jack Howland over on Twitter. I'm an avid listener from Bristol in England. I'm a huge true crime fan and ingest as much true crime content as I can. Your podcast has become a favorite. Love the concise setup, detailed information, and reasoned views. Keep up the great work. Thank you for choosing my suggestion on Donald Pee Wee Gaskins. And have you heard about the Carl Panzrim topic? So another recommendation coming in. We appreciate that. This comes from Fun SD Sun over on Apple Podcasts. I've been listening to you both for a while now. I really like how you present each case and story, offering your own opinions openly yet respectfully. I enjoy your friendly banter. Bravo to you both on your research and your hard work.
That's who we are, man. Open and respectful.
Yeah, that's the new tattoo you got. It says open and respectful across your chest.
Yep, another idea. It's better than the no regrets.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Really none? No regrets? Yeah. So anybody over on Patreon we need to thank?
Of course, man. We've got Carrie who came in $30 level, so took advantage of that annual membership for 15% off. We have Amy. This is probably our biggest like Patreon supporter monetary amount that I remember.
Same.
$255 coming in, so $25 monthly, but took advantage of the annual membership to get 15% off. So Amy, I've reached out to you. If you have a case, let me know. We got you. We're going to hook you up. And then didn't show up on our Patreon page, but over on our email, it says that Mona Pomona.
Yeah.
That's an awesome name. Came in at our $3 level. So listen, if there's ever been a time where you've joined Patreon and we didn't say your name, I'm afraid there's a glitch in the matrix. So let us know and we'll say your name.
Yeah, I just want to go back to Amy and say thank you so much for your support. We've said it a billion times. Without Patreon support, we wouldn't be here. So greatly appreciate that and can't wait to get into this one.
Yeah, so I think we're going to have a lot of dialogue in this one for sure. So why don't you go ahead and get the ball rolling?
We're going to start out talking about somebody named Walburga Korschel.
I noticed that our writer put this name in your section, and I don't think that was a coincidence.
Well, I'm sure it's not pronounced like Mark Wahlberg and Donnie Wahlberg, but that's how I said it.
Well, the good news is she goes by Dolly, and that's what I'm going to call her.
Dolly was born to German immigrants in 1880, and she grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. She was raised around a community of German immigrants, and she was very popular. In fact, she always had a man in her life. When she was just 12 years old, she started working at a textile factory owned by Fred Osterreich.
So those child labor laws were not in place in the 1800s, right?
A lot looser. You had to get done what you had to get done, right? Most people were working on their farms, but she's going to start working in this factory. Now, Fred was also a German immigrant, and he frequently hired other Germans to work in his factory. Dolly was an attractive and charismatic girl as a teenager. When she was 17, she and Fred, who was her boss when she was 12, got married.
Fred was a hardworking businessman, but they say he was also a really heavy drinker. When they were married, that made Dolly a housewife, and Fred was rumored to be unlikable. So Dolly had to step in at the factory sometimes. Like if there was a disagreement between Fred and one of his staff, she would have to come in and kind of smooth things over. Fred worked long hours. It like basically think about he left early in the morning, didn't get home till late at night. So he was away a lot. And that left Dolly home alone. And Dolly got lonely. She has, you know, needs, marriage needs that are not being met, if you can pick up what I'm putting down. So that made her kind of look elsewhere for love. It's rumored that she had many lovers at the home while Fred was working at the mill, or if he was out drinking, she would have people over.
You know, there are rumors that she just had an insane sex drive and was trying to get Fred to make love to her 8 to 10 times a day. Just insane. She had different level energy.
That is different level. I mean, but that time in your life is when you are probably at your peak anyway. And it sounds like her peak was beyond everybody else's peak.
Yeah. And sounds like Fred may have been over the hill. So on a warm day in 1913, now 33 years old, Dolly's sewing machine broke. So she called her husband to send one of his repairmen over to the house. That's when 17-year-old Otto Sanuber entered the situation, and this is where his life would change forever. That day, Dolly and Otto started an intense affair. At first, they carried it on in secret. They would meet at hotels. Her sewing machine would break often, and they had sexual encounters regularly. But between nosy neighbors and Dolly's carelessness in keeping things secret, Fred eventually found out about his wife's widespread infidelity. People saw Otto coming and going.
How many times is this sewing machine going to break? Fred sends the same guy over before he realizes, maybe I just need to buy a new sewing machine.
Yeah, that would save you a lot of money and your marriage, maybe. So he ended up confronting Dolly, and she promised to end things with Otto. But that is not at all what happened, because Dolly had other plans. Instead of breaking up with Otto, instead of ending her marriage to Fred to be with Otto, she decided to hide Otto in her house. He quit his job working for Fred and moved into the attic where they lived. Yeah.
The attic. All right. I mean, unfortunately, we both know people who have had, you know, bad marriages. Marriages went south and there was an affair and stuff. But I can't think of a time where the spouse or whatever moved the person they're having an affair with into their house. Like, that's next level.
Like, he lives there. It's not like he's just visiting and that's where they have the affairs. But he had no family and no close friends. Nobody missed him. Nobody noticed that Otto had completely disappeared and only existed in the confines of this attic. Now, this attic was accessible through a panel in the ceiling of the closet of Dolly and Fred's bedroom. So he would come down from the bedroom while Fred was at work, have sex with Dolly, clean the house up, and go back up to the attic.
Well, and like, you're not joking. Like, so, all right, Dolly gave Otto a cot, some food, a lamp, books, and writing materials. I mean, he's got to be entertained for those few short hours that Fred is home, right?
Yeah.
He needs to rest up.
When he's awake and not having sex with Dolly.
We're making light of this. I mean, it was from the 1800s. It's going to get worse.
Yeah, it's going to get bad.
During the day, like you said, he helped Dolly with household chores and would carry on their affair. And he referred to himself as her sex slave. And he claimed that they made love up to 8 times a day. So, wow, that's crazy.
It's going to take a lot of, I would think he would be eating a lot of food from their house.
And got a carbo load, man.
He's got to like staying hydrated, drinking a lot. Like, you got to notice the sustenance.
I'd imagine it's hot in an attic depending on what time of year this is. So hopefully the dude had some water.
Yeah. Because,
all right, we're 12-year-old boys. Let's get back on it. So at night, Otto lived in total silence in the attic. Now, he spent his time reading and writing pulp fiction stories that Dolly mailed to potential publishers. So when he's not downstairs having, you know, the time of his life with Dolly, he's up there trying to make it big by writing these stories. So that's pretty cool.
It is. It's almost a literal ghostwriter, since nobody knows that he exists. So this affair went on for 5 years of him living in the attic in 1918, when Fred decided that he and Dolly needed to sell the house and move to Los Angeles.
And it's pretty much he decided this.
Yeah.
It wasn't Dolly's decision.
No, he's moving for business reasons, to get a change of scenery, and she doesn't work outside the home, so he made this decision, and it could have been really complicating for Dolly and Otto to continue this relationship, but Dolly had another plan. So she agreed to move to LA under one condition, that she got to choose their new home. Now, John, as she's scouring the early 1900s internet for houses, I know the internet didn't exist.
I know.
What's she looking for?
Well, I mean, I would imagine she's calling up the realtors, like, or sending telegrams. Need house, big attic.
Big attic. She purposefully. Like,
what's the deal with the attic? I need a garage, woman.
Yeah. But she picked out a house with an attic, which is tough to find in LA. And after a while, she sent Otto out to LA to get settled in the attic before she and Fred moved out there.
That's awesome.
Otto left Milwaukee and settled into the attic shortly before they moved in, and they continued their affair in LA for 4 more years.
If I was Otto, I would have conditions like, look, ma'am, I need more than a cot. You're going to need to roll a king size mattress up in that attic somehow.
We're going to need to get some fans. We're going to need my own fridge.
I'm going to need a fridge.
Yeah,
for sure.
God, this is such an odd
story. Did they have fridges back then? Like, I'm going to need my own icebox.
There you go. Icebox. I need to cure my meat and salt. So everything was going well. They're on year 9 of their affair of him living in the attic. 9 years, John.
Wow.
I can't keep a secret from anybody in my family, like Christmas gifts. I can't hide those for more than a month.
When I have a big secret that I'm not supposed to tell anybody, I tell you instantly and then tell you. You kept a huge secret from your wife for me one time.
Yeah.
You were the first person I told that we were pregnant, but my wife wanted to tell everybody, so I had to tell you. I was like, you cannot tell your wife, and you did it.
Yeah.
You're like my best friend.
I got your back. I got your back. We're going to take a break, share some secrets. When we get back from the break, we're going to talk about how all this came to a head on the fateful night of August 22nd, 1922.
So what really happened that night remains hotly debated. Allegedly, an argument broke out between Dolly and Fred. Fred did have a history of getting aggressive with Dolly and becoming violent with his wife when he'd been drinking. And this night, their argument grew very loud. And remember, your boy Otto is upstairs in the attic. Well, he believed Dolly was in danger, so he snuck out of the attic and he got 2 25 caliber pistols from the bedroom nightstand. I mean, at this point, he knows where everything in the house is, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's the one that upkeeps it.
When Otto began to defend Dolly from Fred, that was when a struggle ensued. Fred was shot 3 times, once in the head and twice in the chest. As Fred bled out on the floor, Dolly and Otto devised a plan. They quickly made the room look like someone had broken in. Otto then locked Dolly in a closet from the outside, leaving her with an alibi. So she couldn't have got the shot off into her husband if she had been locked in a closet, and she was locked from the outside, so she can't physically lock herself in a closet.
This looks like somebody broke in the house, locked her in the closet, and shot her husband and robbed the place.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a great plan. Now, he knew that neighbors would report the gunshots, so he took the key, the guns, and some money, and Fred's diamond watch up with him to the attic.
Picture this scene, John. You're Fred, you've had too much to drink, you're getting upset at your wife, and all of a sudden, out of your bedroom comes this guy you haven't seen in 10 years, guns a-blazing at you.
Now, there were times where Fred would hear stuff in the attic,
yeah,
and then she would say, oh, it's just the mice, they're getting out of control.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, I'm a guy, and if I know there's mice in the attic, I'm going to go do something about it. And that's when I'm going to find a cot and someone squatting in my attic.
Yeah. How did she keep this from him? I don't know, but this had to be one of the weirdest scenarios that a person could encounter.
Yeah. Like you encounter a man coming out of your closet or whatever the attic access was, and then he shoots you.
Yeah.
Or somebody shoots you.
Yeah. And these were smaller weapons. When police arrived, they didn't know that there was a man in the attic, obviously. They didn't quite believe Dolly. They felt like she was being, she was withholding information, but they couldn't explain how she locked herself in the closet, so they could not pursue charges against Dolly for anything that had happened. And they also believed that these 25 caliber pistols were too small for somebody who's going to commit a burglary to be carrying around. So they thought the entire story was suspect. Now, after the murder, Dolly decided to move into a house in the same neighborhood. Otto moved with her and continued living in her attic for another 8 years.
So are we talking almost 20 years here?
Yeah, we're at like 17, 18 years at this point of living in the attic. She doesn't even have a husband now. She can't let him stay on the couch?
Yeah, well, you can bring the boy down, man. That's crazy. Maybe he's comfortable up there. I don't know.
Maybe this is just like it keeps it exciting for him to feel like he's a sex slave and not actually in a relationship with her.
I mean, like if you had the chance, would sometimes you move to the attic?
Dude, I would love to live in my attic.
Like, I don't know. Downstairs, it's kind of crazy. You got a lot of people.
A lot of things happening. Yourself. It's quiet in the attic. It is hot, though. So she actually managed to get a few of Otto's stories published. And she gave him that money, and he was able to buy himself a typewriter so that he could produce more content. Now,
just to be clear, like she could have bought him a typewriter at any point.
Yeah, they're rich. And I don't know if she got any type of insurance from her husband, but Otto feels like things are looking up for him. He doesn't have to be quiet anymore, even though he's still living in the attic. And he has a typewriter, and now that Dolly doesn't have a husband around, he can use his typewriter whenever he wants without worrying about the noise.
But it seems that one man was never going to be enough for Dolly. So while Otto remained in the attic, Dolly started having an affair with her attorney, Herman Shapiro. So in 1930, she actually gave Herman her late husband's diamond watch as a gift. Now, the last time we saw this watch, Otto had grabbed it and took it up to the attic. You remember that?
So as far as society and authorities know, this watch has been stolen by burglars.
Yep. She actually reported the watch stolen to police. When she gave it to Shapiro, he recognized it because, I mean, she was his attorney. He knows that it was reported stolen. But Dolly was able to explain it away, saying that she found it in the front yard. And so the burglars or the murderer must have dropped it as they were running away. So Herman kind of just dropped it, let it go. He kept the watch.
Interesting. Also, you said Herman, as it's also her man. And I think that's appropriate for Dolly in this situation. But like Dolly's first husband, Herman spent long hours at the office. She had Otto in the attic, but she, again, felt like that wasn't enough. So she took up with a local businessman named Roy Klum.
It takes three men to satisfy Dolly, and that might not even be enough.
They entered into a sexual relationship, and eventually Dolly asked him for a favor. She told him that one of her guns looked too much like the one used to kill her late husband, and she was worried about somebody finding it and her getting in trouble. So she asked Roy to dispose of this weapon. Now, Roy happily did what Dolly asked, throwing the gun into some local tar pits. She asked a neighbor to bury the other gun in his yard. So she's using her body to create these relationships to get people to do these shady things for her to help cover up a murder that, while she didn't commit, she was a big part of, and a big part of concealing it as well. So not only is she getting her sexual needs met, but she's also getting other people to do dirty work so that she and Otto don't have to cover this up all on their own.
But when Dolly eventually called things off with Roy, he went to the police with the gun story. He told investigators he found the gun in the tar pits, and Dolly was arrested in July of 1923. So while in jail, Dolly had to reveal her live-in lover. So she asked Herman, the attorney, and also her lover, to go buy groceries, bring them to the house, and type tap twice on the attic door to let Otto know that it was safe to come out. Dolly also tried to tell Herman that Otto wasn't her lover, you know, because Herman's also her lover. So she told him that Otto was her vagabond brother, which, you know, we're talking about a story from the early 1900s, late 1800s. Like, why can't we use the word vagabond anymore? I love that word.
It's a fun word to say. Really is.
When Herman went into the attic, he found Otto. Otto was thin. He was pale. He did not look well. And he was also starved for not only food, but human interaction, human conversation. He eventually told Herman everything about his relationship with Dolly and his role in the murder. Dolly also eventually dropped her story of burglars and told police that she and Fred had argued and Otto was defending her. So the truth is all out on the table now.
Now, Otto was, of course, arrested at this point, and he was tried for manslaughter. No murder charge, but manslaughter. And the case was all over the media, where they called Otto the Batman because he lived in a cave-like attic. Otto, however, was released since the statute of limitations of manslaughter had run out. He's now a free man.
Well, while the murder weapons were found by investigators, they were so corroded that they could not be positively identified as the exact guns that killed Fred. Now, they were found to be the same caliber as the gun that killed Fred. So with that, plus the confession of self-defense, Dolly was taken to trial on a conspiracy charge. Her trial ended with a hung jury, with most of the jurors leaning towards an acquittal. By 1936, the indictment against her was finally dropped. So she is not going to be punished, not held responsible for her husband's death.
Yeah, nobody's being held accountable here. And let's talk a little bit about the statute of limitations. That is in place for a lot of different crimes. What is the ultimate purpose, in your opinion, of a statute of limitations?
I don't know. Like, if I do something small enough yet illegal, you can't not report that for 20 years and then report it 20 years later and then me be held responsible for it. The time frame, I don't know. I'm not making very much sense. Can you pitch in?
Yeah, I'm, that's it. But you still committed the crime. That fact doesn't change. So this is coming up in the Ryan Duke trial as well, with some of the other things he's being charged with, like concealing a body. And when does the clock start on that statute of limitations? And when does it end? And how can you tie that into other charges? Murder has no statute of limitations.
And there's other crimes too. Like, I'm almost certain that rape does not have a statute of limitations.
However, neither of these individuals were charged with murder, which, going back to what you said, how Fred was killed, he was shot twice in the chest and one in the head. If you watched a mafia movie, that's how you execute somebody.
Yeah. I mean, that's like a saying. Yeah. Twice in the chest, one in the head.
Yeah. So I don't know why nobody was charged for murder here. That kind of blows my mind. I also want to talk about the gun evidence. The more we do this and the more true crime I investigate, the more things I watch, the less I trust science, to be honest with you. I don't know that I completely trust being able to tie a bullet to a gun anymore.
Okay. We've never talked about this off the air, so that's a bit surprising to me.
Yeah, I don't know. The more I hear about it, the less exact it is. It's about the grooves inside the weapon and how they impact the slug as it's coming out. Who's to say that it's a perfect match? Who's to say that I can't have two guns that are way too similar, or that I can't have something happen inside the weapon that's going to change that? And it may show that bullets don't match when they should.
I need to do some research on this to really formulate a good opinion, but guns are mass produced. So if there is no difference in each gun, then of course they're going to be similar. So, I mean, is there any kind of policy in place that they have to put distinctive markings in each barrel that's manufactured? That seems crazy to me that a company would agree to do that.
Yeah, well, they would agree.
That takes a lot of time and energy.
Yeah, we're going to do that just in case our products are used to kill people. That's not a great message you're trying to send, I don't think.
But with modern technology, you would think that if I have a Glock 25, they're all going to be the same barrels. the markings are going to be exactly the same because they're made by not a human anymore.
Right. Yeah. And
I think you can say, oh, this person was killed with a Glock 25. And then the other evidence that puts you at the scene of the crime is really what nails the coffin. But I mean, in one city, there could be 20 guns that could have killed somebody.
Yeah.
So it's just a small piece of the puzzle, I guess.
Yeah. I don't really love it. I don't really trust it. And here, I mean, we're still in the 1930s, right? I don't think that they had the high-tech technology, even if the guns weren't corroded, to make this connection.
And at that time, maybe guns were not being mass-produced. Maybe there was some distinct markings on guns. So maybe it was actually more reliable back then than it was now, or it is now.
It was probably more reliable, but less detectable, I would say, because we didn't have as good of technology to test those. And of course, this case has never been revisited. Otto eventually moved to Canada. He changed his name to Walter Klein. Really don't know why. Could have been Calvin Klein. He married another woman, and eventually they moved back to Los Angeles. He lived the rest of his life in relative obscurity. After her trial, Dolly seemed to have learned her lesson. She spent the rest of her life living with one single man in Los Angeles, as far as we know.
Yeah.
She died at the age of 80 in 1961, having lived a very full life with many lovers and covering up a murder and getting away with it.
Yeah. I mean, so did she shoot? Did both of them shoot Fred?
Like, no,
was all Fred?
Otto. Yeah. Based on what we know, Otto came out, like, I picture him with a pistol in each hand. Just like
Wyatt Earp style.
Yeah, like Billy the Kid coming out of the attic there to shoot this man. And she immediately agreed to help cover it up. Obviously, she was very fond of Otto. She kept him in the attic for almost 20 years.
I don't know. I wonder if there's more to the story. Part of me wonders if Otto did the two to the chest and then she did the one to the head.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, their marriage was rocky. And then not only was it rocky, but he was also abusive.
Yeah. So
I just wonder if she had more of a role with his murder than we know, and we'll never know.
No, she was locked in the closet when authorities got there, so there was nothing they could do to try to prove that she was involved in the actual murder, and she was only charged with conspiracy to commit murder, which, again, statute of limitations had not run out on that, but it had run out on manslaughter, which she was mind-blowing to me.
Charged and acquitted, so no justice for Fred.
Well, with a hung jury, she could have been tried again, but that didn't happen.
But if he was abusive and this was like a self-defense kind of thing, maybe there doesn't need to be justice for Fred. Maybe that was what justice was him dying.
That's an interesting thought that I hadn't considered. I don't know if her boyfriend coming out of the attic and doing it meets the self-defense standard there.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm in your home, invited guest, and then you start trying to kill your wife, I have the right to kill you. So, I don't feel
like that was a threat.
No,
I mean, throwing that out there.
First off, I mean, I'm certain your wife would take up for herself and I wouldn't have to do anything.
Yeah.
I know your wife. But like, yeah, you're an uninvited guest, at least from Fred's perspective. But I mean, if Fred's hitting her or going to kill her in some way, then Otto has the right to come out of the attic and shoot the boy up.
Well, this is their story. Of course, Fred's not alive to tell his side of the story. Perhaps it wasn't getting violent. Perhaps it was just a debate or argument. And Otto was just tired of hearing his girl get yelled at. So he went downstairs with dual wielding pistols. So I wouldn't say this was self-defense without more information, especially since the police couldn't really get any more evidence from the actual scene.
No, I agree. And I'm just speculating. It's fun to talk about.
Yeah, this is a really, really weird and interesting case. So
I guess the moral of this story is if you're lonely and not getting your needs met, don't move a guy into the attic. It's not going to end well.
I still can't wrap my mind around him being up there for 17 years. That's
a long time. That is insane.
It really is. But they got away with it and went on to live their own lives relatively happily ever after, it seems. So I wish that we had seen some justice for Fred. And I wish Dolly could have how much of her relationship with Otto could have been like gaslighting and psychological control for him to live in the attic for 17 years. That seems like some kind of abuse on its own. I think it would be considered that in 2022, but not in 1922.
And I mean, he's working for her during the day, and then at night he's working, putting those stories together so she could sell those and try to get them published. So
yeah,
the dude kind of was living like he was a indentured servant.
Yeah. Guys, we appreciate you hanging out with us through this one. Certainly unique in a number of ways. I find it interesting how we are over 300 episodes in and we still find unique things happening.
We haven't talked about this off the air, but like we're in our fifth year of doing this.
Yeah,
it's crazy. We could not do that without you guys, especially those of you who have joined Patreon. We love you. We could not do this without you. And we're not just saying that. Like, we're legit.
We really wouldn't be doing it anymore. So thank you all so much for your support. Thank you to those who have done ratings and reviews. That's really the most helpful thing you can do to help our show get out there to everybody else. And we'll be back on Friday with a true crime to go. In the meantime, make sure you check for those Ryan Duke trial updates.
Until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.